Voice UI is everywhere. From our phone, to our kitchen, to our office at work, we are using voice to communicate with our computers. This method of interface is synergizing with other emerging smartware technologies to immerse us in spaces that feel decidedly futuristic. To go deep on different contexts for how voice is and will impact our everyday lives, we welcome Karen Koshansky, an experienced designer, to the show. A recognized expert in the field, Karen started working on designing voice experiences in 1996 and continues doing cutting-edge work today. My name is Dirk Niemeyer, a social futurist interested in systems that will make the quality of our lives better. My partner is Jonathan Follett, a writer, composer, and emerging tech researcher. Welcome to Season 2, Episode 7 of Creative Next, a show about future-proofing creatives in a world of AI automation. Let's get started. Voice UI is a recurring topic this season. From Erica Lee's exploration of progressive UIs and the impact of AI, to Shawali Goel's sharing its relationship to natural language processing. And certainly in our everyday lives, here in the United States, it is becoming an increasingly common affordance for more usable, lower friction interactions with our machines. This is a primarily good thing. Voice technology is only rarely a requirement. We can generally return to our type, click, swipe paradigm if and as we prefer. Voice serves as a choice, to be used or not, by those who prefer it. As such, it is hard to think poorly of it. Even if we personally don't like how voice works, its existence is not limiting what we would otherwise be able to do. However, this will continue to change. As smartware imbues formerly analog environments with increasingly sophisticated digital capabilities, these new contexts will be designed to work natively with the most appropriate interface form. More often than not, that will often end up being with voice. The traditional interfaces we are accustomed to will shift out of the primary workflow and be in more auxiliary roles where they can provide emergency redundancy or merely just a way to reset or manage the settings of the system. For younger people, this will be a seamless transition. They are native to swiping and talking anyway, not typing and clicking. For older people, this may not be so smooth. Similar to the ways in which our own parents were unable to set the damn time on the VCR decades ago, so too will we need to grapple with the demands of an interface that is foreign. The good news with voice is that, unlike arcane and surprisingly confusing systems such as those on the VCR, often requiring the instruction manual in order to initially decipher, voice UI is by design supposed to be intuitive, not with how we use machines, but with how we interact with our world. So while they may not be native to us, the relative lack of obfuscation compared to interfaces of the past should, at least to some degree, keep us from being the subject of our bemused children's derision. To deeply explore how voice UI is and will be integrating into powerful smartware environments, we are pleased to welcome our friend Karen Koshansky to Creative Next. Karen is an experienced designer and expert in the field of voice experiences. She is or has worked for a myriad of companies on projects in this space, including Google, Jawbone, Zooks, and even Lego. Let's begin by understanding one of the initially popular voice UI applications for corporations, chatbots.
People use the term chatbot, and I think we can talk about it in two different kinds of chatbots here. One is text-based chatbots. So this is your Facebook Messenger bots. You are chatting with text on Facebook Messenger to KLM Airline or to another customer service, you know, kind of customer-oriented, consumer-oriented brand, or you go to a website like for your telecommunications bill, like your mobile phone bill, and you press chat and you're like, why was I charged roaming charges this month? Those are all when it's front end kind of automated by computers, that's one kind of chatbot. And I would also say, maybe we'll talk about in a minute, our voice assistants, right? And all the voice bots. And those are the skills and actions and ways that people are creating voice experiences for the smart speakers in our homes now, the Alexa and Google Assistant, Google Home speakers. So if we are going to talk about text-based chatbots, I think the reality is there's so much information out there. There's so much crap on the web. There's so much there. We're moving into a world of direct access to information. I don't want to go to a website and poke around and scroll and look and browse and click. I just want to know an answer. I just want to know something. And so it's the ability to ask a question and get an answer back. That's kind of some of the promise.
Direct access to information. This is an incredibly important concept to understand with voice UI. The last 20-something years of the internet have been driven by explicit architecture, menus, submenus, and content. Strategically, the objective was generally to get all of the information out there on the site and then have paths for people to eventually find it. Terms like breadcrumbs and sitemaps were hugely important. With the rise of smartphones, companies spun off parts of their online objectives into apps that didn't try to be the entire company, but just handled targeted aspects of what customers would need to do. This was strictly an improvement, at least conceptually, over cumbersome websites with all of the stuffs. But due to a variety of factors, such as user credentialing and poor workflows, business use of mobile apps is very hit and miss. Now, while voice isn't refined yet, the very nature of it sweeps away the clunkiness of the previous forms. Once it is implemented correctly and refined over time, it will increasingly deliver on the promise of direct access to information. That is something we sort of assume is true of the internet, but often hasn't been, particularly within a specific context like a company. That's all going to change. It's not sexy, but it's one of the most useful wins that voice UI has to offer. How might these technologies automate humans out of jobs?
I'm a firm believer of technology to augment humans and not replace humans, or kind of let humans do other things. But someone to answer the phone 24/7 for mundane questions or something that can't be found on a website doesn't seem like a great use of time. I think chatbots are our way to build even a bigger audience, a bigger connection from a brand to users. So, for example, in 2017, Kia created a chatbot for a new car that they were launching, the Niro bot. And it was a way for potential buyers of the car to ask questions like, does it come in red? You know, does it have blah, blah, blah? It created brand awareness and customer education. And they said that they got, the week of the Super Bowl, they got 115,000 chat interactions with this bot that wouldn't have happened before, right? It's not like 115,000 people would have gone into a Kia dealership. So in that way, it's creating brand awareness. And I would say doing things that a human wouldn't have otherwise done, and maybe created better relationships with users so that when people go into the Kia dealer, they already have in mind something, you know, to start that conversation with car dealer, for example.
I love Karen's framing here because it extends to other contexts where AI automation and augmentation will impact how we work. Where these technologies take away work, that work is often things that humans have historically been forced to do, because they needed to be done, but are not necessarily things we want to or even should be doing. There is a cottage industry of humor around the insanity of telephone customer service for a reason. Instead, with technologies like these, companies not only are offering significantly more utility and value to their customers than would be possible in the old structure, they are creating more interest and engagement between customers and companies that can lead to more work in, say, sales. Salespeople are generally much higher paid than telephone customer service people, and the work is more humane as well. Karen sees these technologies falling into a progressive framework. Let's learn more about that now.
On the voice assistant side, the way that I like to think about voice and where it's come from 20 years ago when I started to where it's going, I kind of bucketize it in different ways. So what we see a lot of right now and what people are using voice for are very command-driven things. So being able to say, play, you know, Rolling Stones on Spotify, right? And so direct commands to get something. Great, that seems pretty straightforward. I also think that there's a way that voice can give you superpowers, almost things that you wouldn't have otherwise thought to do, or things that help take the friction out. So I love this example. I was listening to Tom McElreath of the Food Network. So imagine, or you're watching Food Network and you see, like, you know, Garden, like, making a chicken, like a chicken recipe, and you're able to say, hey, Food Network, send that recipe to Alexa or save that recipe. That's a superpower. Like, those are things we're not able to do today. So using voice to kind of reduce friction or being able to move across channels becomes super, super powerful. Then I would say, if we think about voice assistants themselves, kind of start with asking a question and getting an answer. You know, what's the tallest mountain in the world? And Google being able to answer you.
Superpower, like magic, is such a cool metaphor. Karen's vision for the interactivity between the television program we are watching and a separate app or environment for recipes and cooking is technology at its very best. We can already see breadcrumbs to this when watching television on Amazon with their X-ray feature. While watching a show on your computer, by moving your mouse over the screen, additional context about the actors and scene come up as a sidebar over the content. You can click from this directly into, for example, the Internet Movie Database and learn even more about something or someone that you are watching. This sort of deeper context under the surface of your primary content is just a step away from the superpower Karen shares here. Let's hear how her progression of these technologies continues.
And then I think that the next level up is this agent bucket, an agent being able to do something for you. And this is what we started to see a little bit with Google Duplex, right? I am trusting my voice assistant to go and do something on my behalf. And that's what we saw. We saw somebody asking to, you know, make a haircut appointment. So again, like moving from just question and answer to acting on my behalf, which people, you're right, freaked out in that it sounded so natural. It sounded very human intentionally. I welcome this. I welcome the ability to give a whole bunch of tasks to an agent to go off and do on my behalf. It kind of, again, reducing friction in my life, reducing my to-do list. Like, what are those things that I can offload to somebody else to do? Like, I don't want to spend time doing my expense reports. I don't want to spend time like finding the best flight to get, you know, from here to San Francisco. What are those things that I can offload? And I think we're getting more into that, into the assistant and the agent and how they can help.
A thread that is emerging here is getting rid of things that people shouldn't need to be doing in the first place. Whether that is at the scale of an entire job or career, or at the scale of how we leverage machines to our best benefit, much of what these more primitive versions of voice technologies promise to eliminate are things that range from boring to odious. It is an arbitrage of sorts, shifting us from these unsophisticated early environments to things that are more appropriate for us.
I would say just the two other kind of buckets, like the spectrum of voice assistants. There's a next bucket of just having a voice assistant as a confidant or a companion. And we're seeing a lot of like the social robots, although they haven't been so successful, like Jibo and Curry. These robots that are your companions that have a voice kind of interface. And some of what they're meant to do is to just be a companion and have a conversation. And we can talk more about, you know, whether that's replacing the real humans in your life. But some people just need that companionship or need the elderly to like be reminded to take their medicine in the evening. And then the fourth bucket that I put these in, that kind of where this is going, is our voice assistants kind of being another person at the table. This is like actually having an opinion and being an arbitrator or being a judge or being someone in the room. Like it's another person at the table that has a voice. And we're starting to see this a little bit in fun ways. When in Rome is an Alexa game, that Alexa is kind of moderating the game. So she's the moderator and kind of organizes the game around some traveling the world. Or Kids Court, which is a great, amazing Alexa skill where Alexa is the judge. If you have kids, you should go and play this. It's like if your kid is getting into trouble, Alexa holds a whole trial to see if your kids are guilty. And it's pretty awesome. So again, like another person, a person in the room, another voice, someone with an opinion. So there's lots of room in all of this to kind of expand forward and provide real value to people throughout their day.
When in Rome and Kids Court are interesting proofs of concept. Both of them are exciting and also clumsy. The awkwardness of Alexa that led me to unplug and pack away my own Alexa device is front and center in the actual use of these apps. If you don't have an Alexa, there are videos on YouTube of these apps in action. The potential, particularly in Kids Court, is certainly there. You can see the outlines of a system that could increasingly automate more procedural aspects of the real-world legal system, even beyond just a form of enhanced parenting. But it is obviously nowhere near ready for actual use. It is a novelty that previews good future technology. What are some applications Karen sees that can contribute more to the common good?
You know, there are conversations that people just don't want to have, and chatbots and voice assistants are really good at that. Think about healthcare. Think about, conversations with your mobile provider. Are there things that a chatbot, a voice assistant can do before it needs to go to a human? Can it help diagnose, you know, something that's wrong? People don't like to talk to doctors and don't have, you know, a lot of access directly to doctors. So I see huge areas of providing those intermediate steps maybe before you go to a human. You know, is this something you need to see a doctor for? I see advancements definitely in education, learning new languages with some of these, like having somebody, you know, a teacher, quote unquote, to be able to walk you through and kind of be there and understand where you are in your learning and guide you.
Healthcare and education are perhaps the two most important pillars of a functioning society. What are some other voice UI applications coming up?
On the creative side, I've seen some really interesting things. I don't think anything is there yet, but using your voice to, you know, look at your screen and be able to and say, draw a blue ball, move the ball over there, draw a tree. Using your voice to create worlds, to create designs, I think is very powerful. It's like everyone also was like, why is Amazon coming out with a microwave, right? Like, why do you need to talk to your microwave? But to be able to say to your microwave, you know, make me a baked potato, instead of having to figure out how long does it need to go in for, what are the settings, what are all these buttons, just use what you have, you know, your voice to naturally communicate. And I think that maybe there's ways that we can help the creative workforce in a lot of these ways as well.
The drawing example is going to be clumsy at first. Blue ball is so general. The machines will almost certainly not give you an output that you expect. In terms of things like size, color, texture, and material, blue ball can manifest in a bunch of different ways. On the other hand, asking your microwave to cook a baked potato is another superpower use case. With a microphone that has the ability to measure weight and size, we could quickly be on the road to the best possible microwave baked potatoes. Now, if only the microwave could also move the potato from the bag to the microwave, and then, when complete, from the microwave to our plate. We'll see if robotics advance in a way that covers that part of the use case as well. Either way, though, voice commands to smart microwaves is a great use of technology. Karen has also worked with Magic Leap, the spatial computing company. Let's hear where their mixed reality activities are going.
So virtual reality is, you know, you put on this headset and you see a whole new world. You're taken somewhere completely different. Spatial computing, or what is kind of mixed reality, you put on your headset and you're still in your living room, but in your living room now are digital elements that kind of fit within your living room. So you might say, hey, open my calendar and put it on the wall over there. Right. And so your work calendar is digitally imposed on the wall. So now you have digital elements that understand the spatial characteristics of your surroundings, and you're able to blend, you know, reality, like your room, with digital elements. The impacts of this are potentially huge. It's digital elements that are able to like sit on a table because they understand like where there's a table, or able to sit next to you on a chair because again, it understands the world around you. It's not just like augmented reality, which is very flat. They actually have shape and are consistent and aware of the surroundings as well. And I think that the impacts can potentially be very big. And I think healthcare or learning a trade might be very big in this, being able to learn like how to do surgery on a real kind of 3D spatialized element, or learning things like seeing things that are the real size and the real shape, and being able to like pick up a bone and turn it the other way. You're actually being able to rotate something in real time and see what's there. This is just starting, right? And I think it's a long road to kind of get to something that's for the masses for sure. And, you know, something that we really see how it's going to impact our lives. But I mean, you have to start somewhere.
What will this look like in the workplace?
If you and I were designing, we were architects and we were designing this building, we're looking at a model together. We're like a physical model, and you're across the world. How do we both share what this looks like and feels like? There's a way to do that with spatial computing, with this kind of mixed reality world. We can both feel like we're in the same room, like really shoulder to shoulder. And I think that Magic Leap has started in this way with, I think they call it avatar chat. It's like the avatar of you is right beside me and is actually kind of mimicking your movement. So you nod your head and like your avatar is nodding its head. The cues that we can't see when we're collaborating over, you know, just over like a conference call, things like that. It becomes more deep relationship building and being able to collaborate together. Why do I need an avatar? Like, isn't video good enough? But what about the other elements that you're kind of working with, right? And I think it's true. You just want to call, say hi to somebody, you're going to find another way. But what is it that you're working on together? How are you collaborating? There might be some really interesting things there. And I'm saying like, it definitely, this is the start. It's not clear where it's all going to go yet.
The workplace is increasingly shifting from a centralized location where everyone is present to a virtual framework. These sort of technologies are essential to that working properly. I started shifting to virtual work environments about 9 years ago. What I've learned is that face-to-face collaboration and communication is always richer than virtual. And there is no need for face-to-face to occur on a daily cadence. Given current low-fidelity collaboration technologies, finding the sweet spot of optimal efficiency and effectiveness requires some proportion of face-to-face time. For the companies and projects I am involved with, I find weekly to be the right amount. Other situations may require more or less. But for many of those, it requires that everyone be located in the same geographic region. I am in the greater Boston area. Maintaining a weekly rhythm can only include people within a certain radius of our main location. Let's say a drive that is 2 hours each way at the longest reasonable extreme. Given that I collaborate with people literally around the world, the reality is being face-to-face with many of them is an impossibility. That means our work together, our collaboration, is entirely virtual and thus decidedly suboptimal. Yes, the benefit of working with those people in the ways that we work outweighs the serious negative of losing face-to-face. But wouldn't it be nice if the virtual workplace environment could gain fidelity to the point where face-to-face was not optimal at all? We could choose to get together in the real world because we like each other, but the virtual is so rich that we don't need to. I suspect someday the virtual workplace will actually eclipse the physical, making our being separate optimal to our collaboration. It might sound strange, and it's not coming soon, but it's where this is all sort of heading. So what are some of the key challenges?
I think that the challenge is really around the headset. It's around having to first pay for a very expensive piece of hardware that has to sit on your head. So I think that there's going to be great use cases for it. We talked about like learning a new trade or learning a doctor who's performing surgery to see kind of other models of what he's done before, like exactly what he's doing in the middle of surgery, being able to do this collaboratively or see these things. I think it's more data that can help along the way. But I think for kind of the everyday use, like, am I going to walk into my house and put this on every day? Probably not. Okay, I think it's going to be some specific use cases that are going to lead the way to say how this can be so powerful, and new use cases will come up along the way. I do think that there's, as much as we don't love this idea, that there are going to be other ways to get at some of these interactions. You know, Facebook portal has a camera on it. Like some of the speakers that we're going to see in our living room, these smart speakers will have cameras, and all of a sudden then you can detect who's in the room, where are they looking, these kinds of things. So it's not full on mixed reality spatial computing, but some of those natural interactions are going to be possible in a shorter term. And I think that we're going to see that there's going to be things that are going to be very interesting and useful to do with that.
In a world where our work is primarily virtual, and particularly one where the technology is becoming increasingly powerful and sophisticated, part of our tool set will be the virtual workspace we create in our own residence or shared local workspace. The proper deployment of cameras and sensors, of interactive wall displays, of projection devices, could theoretically even require professional installation and calibration to work properly as an ecosystem. As these technologies improve, the office-in-a-box model of your employer sending you everything you need, that you box and send back when you move on to the next, may prove incompatible. This sort of complex environment will be as much a requirement to our work as a smartphone or computer of today. Most employees prefer to have only one smartphone, for example, instead of juggling the personal device with a separate one for the business. The personal workspace of the future, the personal technology stack of the future, will increasingly put the onus on the worker, while also morphing their personal spaces to be compatible with their work as well as personal uses. Happily, smartware technology is developing to solve some of those issues. Self-driving cars are one of the most progressive platforms where the power of smartware, AI, and voice interfaces are coming together to give us even more superpowers. Karen has worked on these projects for some time.
The vehicle is definitely a right place for innovation. I mean, and we're starting to see this because we're seeing things like Alexa, SoundHound, Google, all being integrated into the vehicles. If you saw the recent ad from Mercedes of, you know, integrating these voice assistants, because there's so much that can be improved in the vehicle. We spend a lot of time in our cars. It's a time where we can try and cross things off our list of things to do. You want to call, a great time to make that haircut appointment or that doctor's appointment, make those calls. But how do you do this? Obviously, very, very safely. But we've only just started to see where the start of it. I've heard of more integration with facial recognition or emotion recognition. So understanding like where the driver is looking and helping the driver to kind of get where they are safely. So if you're too distracted, not focusing on the road, how do you get the driver back to doing what they need to do? I also think that, you know, cars have really focused on the driver and not the whole drive experience, which is, are there kids in the back? You know, are you driving with somebody? Who's driving? Who's the passenger? You know, are there kind of this shared experiences that can be created when there's multiple people in the vehicle? So to know, like, you know, I'm with my husband and my daughter. If the vehicle knows this, that we're all together, it could be that it'll, you know, we more easily listen to the, like, the podcasts that she likes, my 7-year-old, or, you know, games that can be played. I think that we're going to see more integrated experiences into the back seat, into the windows, into knowing who's there, you know, just knowing who's driving. You know, should, when I say call mom, is it me saying call mom versus my husband saying call mom? Like, whose mom are we calling? Like, there can be a lot more personalization happening in the car. I think we're going to see more of that.
We're back to context again. It's something that, as we discussed with Snigdha Chaturvedi and her work on AIs that may someday write stories, is a major sticking point for AI in general. AI is lousy with context. That is especially true for something like storytelling, where the necessary context is nuanced and relates to even more complex dynamics such as culture. These examples in self-driving cars are far more solvable for machines. Whereas rich cultural context likely won't be realized during the 2020s, the use cases Karen has here are on their way to being solved in the years ahead. To wrap up, how will self-driving technology impact our model of car ownership and personal transportation?
I lived in San Francisco for close to 20 years and just, you know, used Lyft and Uber so frequently that it was like, do I really need a car? And then you start to think about, well, I have my gym bag with me and kind of like I use it as a bit of a locker to keep my stuff. And so there was kind of this debate. But I think that there's going to be more services, more choice on how for busy, dense cities, maybe we don't need cars anymore. Shared ownership or, you know, the weekend car, like I need a car like every weekend. And it's such a hassle to like go and rent one every weekend. Like, how do you take away some of that friction? So I think car ownership is definitely going to be changing. And, you know, and it depends. It's like, what kind of car do I want today? I mean, it would almost be nice if I didn't have to buy one. And we like, today I'm going out with my girlfriends and, you know, this is the kind of car we want versus, okay, it's my daughter's birthday party and I have three 7-year-olds to haul across town. Like, is there a way to call up the kind of car that I want for the use that I needed in that time?
Thanks again to our guest, Karen Kashansky. So, John, how did our interview with Karen impact your thinking about the work we are doing with Creative Next?
Well, I really liked what Karen had to say about blending reality and digital elements. So I don't think that I've really considered the extent to which that's possible. It's sort of the magic leap workplace of the future, I think, would be pretty fascinating, in part because there's this element of frustration I have when I've got all these great digital tools, but they're confined to this rectangle, this glowing rectangle in front of me, or, you know, in my pocket, right? I've got the glass brick. But allowing the digital information to flow onto surfaces that are normally reserved for something else, I think would be quite interesting. And we've talked about this a little bit in the past. I think Steven Anderson had something to say about this last season. And this idea that there's a digital overlay that already exists, right, in our world. And, you know, in part this idea of digital overlay is both revealing the information that may already be present, and then also just providing us more natural workspaces rather than, you know, the somewhat unnatural, you know, keyboard plus glowing screen. We've all gotten used to it, but frankly, it's not really a natural working environment. I still prefer, you know, pen and pencil. I still prefer, you know, some of, you know, the other tools. So I think there will be lots of advantages and leverage for creative people as you know, we'll call this the digital slash physical reality starts to come more into being.
You're right that these existing computing environments are not natural, but for me, they are now more comfortable than a pencil and paper, at least. But you're right, they'll keep getting better, which is a real blessing. A number of the things she mentioned are both cool, but also, I think, crucially, are not ready for prime time. And Karen really reminded me that these things don't happen overnight. So the eye-opening initial successes that we get excited about are not immediately commercializable. I think one way we're seeing that is in a topic that Karen covered, which are self-driving cars. So, you know, we've had Tesla Autopilot now for some years. It's, when it first came out, it was incredible. It was remarkable, and it's still cool. But it's also, it's almost more of an illusion than a solution, both in terms of the fact that you do still need to act like a driver, even though the car is doing it. So it's not much of a benefit to the driver. And then, of course, you know, we have had some fatal accidents, which have also shined, you know, a different negative light on it. You know, what the media doesn't cover is that, you know, by percentage, Tesla Autopilot is having less accidents than just people who are normally driving. So it's an improvement. But being that they're happening in the context of this technology that is still not fully formed makes it seem egregious, even though maybe it isn't. But the bottom line is all of this is a process that takes time. And we didn't quickly go from Tesla Autopilot to fully self-driving cars. We're a long way away, I think, from having fully self-driving cars deployed on the roads for all of our benefit. A lot of these things are just previews of things that will happen, at least probably happen, but later. And so as we're thinking about things on Creative Next, you know, Karen's analysis reminds me of that. Like, it's a lot of this just isn't here yet, even if it seems like maybe it is.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's part of the, you know, part of what this project is about. Not only sort of viewing the experimentations and the prototypes and the early adopted technologies, but also considering the ways in which they will either scale or not scale.
That's true. That's right. What did Karen say that was the biggest surprise or new kernel of knowledge for you?
So I think her description around using voice as a creative tool, especially in sort of the digital space, had, you know, I had not considered that before. And I know that, you know, you were less than overwhelmed by that, like, okay, create a blue ball, right? And then this, you know, there's all these possibilities and, yeah, you know, how does that really happen? Yeah. But so for when you're writing or when you're illustrating something, and you know, this is an example that, you know, every designer faces, you need the resources, right, to start with. So you may be doing a layout and you say, okay, I want a bunch of illustrated trees, or I want photos of trees, or I want, you know, I want these things, and they all require creative effort to generate even before you, you know, begin sort of imagining the total piece. Yeah. So this idea that instead of, you know, spending the time sort of generating your initial cannon fodder for creation, like that the machine could be doing this for you in response to your requests, that fascinated me. And I found that to be a new lens with which to view voice interface. I've just hadn't considered that before.
Interesting. Yeah. You know, Kids Court was new to me. And that was fun to research and look into after Karen mentioned it. What I found when I did research it and watch it and sort of experience it is it really is stilted and janky. It's not great, but it is cool. It's really cool. So it's all early. It helps you see forward into the future and understand what will, you can start to put the pieces together of how it will at the end of the day be a superpower, but it sure as heck isn't one yet. So, yeah, I mean, that's sort of reinforcing my first point. But just Kids Court was new to me and certainly was interesting. So what did you learn from Karen that has influenced your life and how you're living today?
Well, I've been giving up, you know, some more thought about automation and superpowers, right? Because unlike you, I actually do use the Alexa device. And there's all sorts of things that you can automate with it. You know, we've experimented with the lights in the house. you know, you can do things like play music, you can get the score for the Bruins game, etc. So all of those things, I think I've scratched the surface on, and this idea of having the superpower has sort of reinvigorated my interest in, like, oh, what could I really do that would take it to the next level?
Yeah.
So I've got all of these smart plugs that are in the box still. So I think I'm going to see if I can extend my superpowers outside of the living room and see what other devices I can make part of my smart home.
Nice. Yeah, you know, I'm thinking now about my workspace in a new way. Frankly, other than monitors being a lot bigger, my studio looks pretty much exactly the way it did at the start of my career some 20 years ago. There's a chair, there's a desk, there's a computer, there's screens, there's accessories. I guess my headset, I now kind of wear my headset all day. That's an addition, but it's just audio. It's not like a VR headset or anything. So I'm now starting to think about, both for myself and for my collaborators, remote folks, what sort of setups should we have? I want to get smarter on mixed reality stuff and what will be out in the next years that is practical and an upgrade to the core work stack, both for an independent creative in general, but also for me and the particular people I'm working with. How can we best benefit from these technologies and really think of our workplace in a more fluid and progressive way? So each episode, we finish up with a thing to think about, one question germane to what's been covered on the show today. This episode's thing to think about is, in a future where you are primarily working from home, what challenges or opportunities does your personal living space present to your making the most of a mixed reality environment? Think about that for yourself, and feel free to tweet at us about it at GoCreativeNext. Creative Next is a proud member of Civil, a community-owned platform for independent journalism. Learn more at civil.co, that's civil.co. We are sponsored by GoInvo, a design practice dedicated to innovation in healthcare, whose clients are as varied as AstraZeneca, 3M Health Information Services, and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Learn more at goinvo.com. We're also sponsored by Design Museum Foundation. A new kind of museum, they believe design can change the world. They're online, nomadic, and focused on making design accessible to everyone. Their mission? Bring the transformative power of design everywhere. You can learn about their exhibitions, events, magazine, and more at designmuseumfoundation.org. Our final sponsor is BIF. As a purpose-driven firm, BIF is committed to bringing design strategy where it is needed most: healthcare, education, and public service, to create value for our most vulnerable populations. To learn more and connect, visit them at biff.is. Please subscribe to Creative Next on Apple Podcasts. You can also find us at Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen. You can get in touch with us at the Creative Next website, creativenext.org, or follow us on Twitter at @GoCreativeNext. On Medium, we are partnered with Towards Data Science, where we publish articles to extend and build upon these episodes. Check out all that Towards Data Science has to offer at towardsdatascience.com. I'm Dirk Niemeyer, who you can reach at @dniemeyer, and my partner in crime is Jonathan Follett, who is at John Follett. Thanks to our guest, Karen Koshansky, who is on Twitter at @KJKosha. Tweet to us with questions, comments, topics, guest suggestions, and include the hashtag CreativeNext. And the home base for everything we do is at creativenext.org. We recommend you sign up for our low-volume newsletter there. That's it for Creative Next Season 2, Episode 7, but here's a clip of what you can expect to hear next time. We'll see you then.
And so one by one, you get these things. They don't cost very much. You don't have to rewire your home for them. It's compatible with the home just as it is today. And before you know it, you do have a smart home.